some news and commentary on future nurse staffing issues, and a look at autonomic dysreflexia. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show, episode 17. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to take a moment and welcome all of you to this episode of the show. If you are a brand new subscriber or listener to The Nursing Show, welcome to the show here. You'll find all of the links to everything I talked about in this particular episode over at nursingshow.com. And you'll find that there as well as other articles and commentary that I post up throughout the week looking at news items and studies that seem to float across my radar having to do with issues in nursing. Of course, if you are a longtime listener to the show, I want to thank you for checking back in with us. And if you're checking out the show via the website or some other version of click to play on the internet, make sure you head over to nursingshow.com and subscribe to The Nursing Show. That way it can be delivered directly to you, absolutely free. So I thought I'd jump in and look at the news this week, and several different stories leapt out at me about nursing shortages and staffing issues. And this is an ongoing, continuing problem that has just been focused on and refocused on. But every time a new study jumps out there, I kind of like to look and see what the numbers are exactly saying. A new research project that is coming out of Vanderbilt University School of Nursing, as well as Dartmouth University and the Congressional Budget Office, looked at the future of nurse staffing in light of some of the interventions that have been put in place in recent years. Increased funding for faculty at nursing schools, increased scholarship money available both in the private and the public sector. And so this study is looking at how these initiatives are affecting the staffing issue. Has it gotten any better? Unfortunately, apparently not. This study says, and I quote one of the more alarming statistics, "While there have been some notable and important improvements, our data shows that we have in no way solved this emerging long-term problem," end quote. In this study, The Future of the Nursing Workforce in the United States, Data, Trends, and Implications, the authors are looking at an expected growth in need for registered nurses to be 2-3% per year and will continue to be at that rate. And that rate has not changed much in the last four decades. That increased demand has continued to increase. And of course, more and more older RNs are retiring and moving out of the direct patient care workforce. This number is expected to continue to increase, getting even faster in its growth curve around 2015 and reaching a peak of about 16% by the time it hits 2025. In other words, that there will be a need for about 500,000 nursing jobs that just don't have anybody to fill them. That's a huge number when you think about the number of nurses that we're going to need if we need to start having extra 500,000 nurses within the next 15 to 20 years. Now, they are looking at long-term and short-term solutions to this issue, but it doesn't seem like, faced by those numbers anyway, we are going to have any kind of easy fix for this problem, especially in light of the fact that the whole healthcare system is facing similar shortages in other fields. I know for a fact that similar predictions face the pre-hospital field of EMTs and paramedics as that workforce is coming under ever-increasing demand and need for assistance. So based on that study, it's not hard to understand why my next news item calls nursing one of the top five recession-proof careers for the next few years. I mean, if we are going to need 500,000 more nurses than we're currently turning out, that is going to definitely make that job recession-proof. And you can find this over at Kiplinger.com. There's a column looking at the five top recession-proof jobs out there, and one of them, of course, is in the nursing field. This also brings up another interesting point for me, as I wonder if we're attracting people to the nursing workforce who are not really called to be nurses. Now, I know I'm new to the nursing community, but I have been in the healthcare field for a number of years. I've paid my dues as a paramedic and am looking forward to being much more involved in caring for patients in a longer term setting, as well as getting out of the cold weather and the back-breaking lifts that have to be done in the field when you just don't have a good way to handle that. So I'm looking forward to being in and out of the cold somewhat, but what about those people who have been doing something completely unrelated to the healthcare field and decide that they're going to become nurses because they can make good money and not be worried about getting laid off? So I think this is a concern and something that needs to be addressed. We need to not just create more nurses, but we need to create more quality nurses. And hopefully, nursing schools and facilities out there will be addressing exactly this particular issue. The third item in the news, though, does give me some hope, and I've seen a few more stories like this out there, talking to teenagers and young adults in the community and making a feature item that these students want to become nurses, that they're planning a career in nursing. I found this story coming out of Staunton, Virginia, where they were interviewing a 15-year-old teenager by the name of Ashley Bosserman. And while she likes to hang out at the local skate park because most of her friends are skateboarders, she really is talking mostly about her future career path. She's really looking forward to becoming a nurse. She became interested in nursing after a relative was injured a couple of years ago, and she had to take care of him, and she really enjoyed that caregiving aspect, and that is what has drawn her to nursing. So, have you seen stories like this in your local paper? Perhaps you need to call up a local reporter, point out the nursing shortage, and maybe encourage them to look for some of these hopeful up-and-coming nurses that are coming through the community. Let's make this a big issue in our region and allow our areas to find those quality nurses to put through the system and make the future nursing leaders of this country and from around the world as well. I think we can do that by keeping the topic of the future nursing shortage in the news, and also by encouraging young people with positive nursing role models and encouraging them to become good caregivers when they do decide to become nurses. So I like seeing stories like this, and I think it's a good way to round out today's look at the news since we were focusing so much on nursing careers. And that's a look at this week's nursing news. Today's tip and trick of the week is going to look at a particular complication of patients who have spinal cord injuries, specifically spinal cord injuries that are located above T6 on the vertebral column. And this particular complication is called autonomic dysreflexia. Now, I've looked at a couple of different studies, and most of the research I've found seems to indicate this is pretty common and turns up more frequently than a lot of other complications we discuss. Autonomic dysreflexia happens in the spinal cord injured patient after they have begun to respond and begin to heal. After that initial spinal shock phase of the injury, they are starting to have a reduction of the edema around the injury site. The patient is beginning to see some return of reflex action, and this is the point where they start becoming hopeful that they're going to have a possibly better recovery than expected. This is where autonomic dysreflexia begins to cause issues and will continue to be an issue for a long time in this patient's recovery and throughout their life, in fact. The spinal cord injury causes a break in the transmission of signals up and down the spinal cord, and this may be partial or it may be a complete interruption of that transmission. Above the injury site, the sensory input and nerves are transmitting information from the autonomic nervous system. However, when it reaches these autonomic impulses, reach the point of the lesion or the injury, they can't pass below. And so there's a large sympathetic, I guess you could call it even a feedback loop, causing the neurotransmitters involved, primarily norepinephrine and dopamine, to cause a variety of extreme sympathetic responses in effect responding to an insult that is no longer there but can't be perceived. There's no feedback to tell the sympathetic nervous system to slow down. And so it continues to release these neurotransmitters and causes a variety of effects: skin pallor, severe sweating, and severe vasoconstriction. Specifically, this is arterial vasoconstriction and causes extremely high blood pressures in the range of 300 millimeters systolic, as high as at least. And so these patients then have this extremely high blood pressure. The body attempts to respond to that by enervating the parasympathetic side of the system, trying to slow things down. So you end up having vagal nerve stimulation causing a bradycardia and peripheral vasodilation on the venous side above the site of the injury, which causes the patient to have vasodilation, including profuse sweating, and the vasodilation causes extreme headaches because of the enlargement of the pain-sensitive vessels in the brain. Now, here's the number that kind of shocked me when I looked at this. You hear about side effects to certain conditions, and usually those side effects are usually on the low end of the scale, usually pretty rare, or maybe 10 to 15%. This particular situation, the numbers I've seen are anywhere from 40 to 90% of all spinal cord patients injured above T6 are going to experience problems related to autonomic dysreflexia. So it's important to understand that this is a significant issue for anybody with any kind of spinal cord injury. It's more prevalent in males than females, about ratio of about 4 to 1. And so you want to be more suspicious that this might be occurring in a male with a spinal cord injury. And also that they may have a specific history involved, including headaches, blurry vision, anxious feelings, apprehension. All of these can be indications of increased prevalence of perhaps past episodes that self-resolved of autonomic dysreflexia. This condition seems to be caused in many cases by just a stimulation of the body and body systems by some stimulus. And this could be something as simple as a urinary tract infection. In fact, this is often associated with increased bladder distension or some kind of bowel impaction or bowel obstruction related to the loss of innervation below the injury site. And so patients who have to catheterize themselves, patients who have to stimulate themselves to have a bowel movement or have not been monitoring their diets carefully in order to maintain regular bowel function are all candidates for increased risk in this particular instance. And so you need to, this is a patient education issue, but sometimes it's easy enough to stop the autonomic dysreflexia simply by removing that stimulus. And it may be something as simple as straight cathing the patient. And so these are some of those history questions as these patients present. Perhaps you're in the emergency department or in the home healthcare setting. You're going to want to be asking these patients about how they understand the onset of this particular problem, how aware they are of the specific signs and symptoms, and how regular they are at their self-care regime, and how you can help them with that by encouraging them proper diet, exercise as they are able, and also plenty of fluids and monitoring of their level of bladder distension. All can be key ways to stop the onset of this problem. Specific signs and symptoms you want to be aware of and on the lookout for include profuse sweating above the level of their injury, specifically, especially in the face, neck, and shoulders, goosebumps usually above the level of the injury, and flushing of the skin above the level of the injury. And all of this is because of the parasympathetic response to the sympathetic storm, if you will, that's going on in the patient's body, that parasympathetic response causing that venous vasodilation to attempt to deal with this particular issue. The patient also may have an issue and report blurred vision. They may be seeing spots. They may be experiencing nasal congestion. So these are all things that you need to be aware of. Now, in addition to bladder distension, urinary tract infection, and problems with bowel distension or impaction, this can also be brought on by things like some kind of invasive test that the patient is undergoing. Sometimes they have problems with gallstones or other abdominal organ problems like appendicitis, onset of menstruation in women, and vaginitis, as well as sexual intercourse, can also contribute to the onset of autonomic dysreflexia. There's really a large number of items listed in any of the research literature I've found, but generally anything that's caused a recent insult to the body or something that might cause a sympathetic response, at least temporarily, can be seen as a possible cause of this problem. Generally, the treatment of these patients is going to primarily involve removing the onset issue and whatever that might be. As if you're having problems with bowel impaction, we need to remove the impaction. If they're having problems with bladder distension, we're going to catheterize them. Generally, catheterization is going to be indicated just to make sure that there's no further impulse stimulation of ongoing problems while other issues are addressed, as well as possibly the administration of antihypertensive agents in patients that are able to handle them. Nitrates, nitroglycerin, perhaps other antihypertensives may all be administered to these patients in the short term until this situation resolves. Continued monitoring, of course, of blood pressure is going to be important, as well as signs and symptoms of other issues. These patients are, of course, at risk for things like strokes and myocardial infarction during the hypertensive crisis, and they need to be monitored carefully both before and after the autonomic dysreflexia resolves. In most cases I've seen, it seems to be that the literature is pointing to a monitoring of up to 2 to 4 hours following the onset of this issue. And then we want to educate patients to be more aware of what caused the onset of the problem, as well as how to watch carefully for early signs of onset so that they can begin to self-treat by removing the insult and then going ahead and seeking appropriate treatment if it doesn't immediately resolve. So that's a quick look at autonomic dysreflexia, and I do have links to a couple of different sites in the show notes so you can follow up and get a bunch more information, including a great link over to the National Institutes of Health page for spinal injuries. There's a great set of resources there, about 20 or 30 different links for many different issues surrounding spinal cord injury. I urge you to head over and check it out for yourself. That is going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show. As always, make sure you head over and check out all the links for this episode and all the other episodes of The Nursing Show over at nursingshow.com. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or corrections for me, please send them in here to comments@nursingshow.com. I always look forward to hearing from the listeners, and it's a great way for the community to contribute to the whole picture here. I am not above making an error, and I want to make sure that we have the correct information here for everyone. So if you have something to add to the discussion, please feel free to chime in. I will wrap up with a song from the independent Podsafe music artist, Caitlin Smith, and her song, Hear Me. If you like what you hear, check out her link in the show notes and let Caitlin know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it for me here. I'm Jimmy Davis, the Pod Medic. I want to remind all of you to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.